I don't think there's no debate here that if your team's not full, if the opposing team's not fully healthy, there's no way you're beating a Nets team of this caliber in a seven-game series as the roster stands now.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the BCB Podcast. This is Aaron Washington, your host. So glad to have you guys back on for another podcast. Excited to talk some more NBA basketball. And this time around, we're going over some All-Star snubs. The All-Star teams reserves were just announced a few days ago as of this recording. And then we're also going to dive into some Brooklyn Nets content. They're one of the hottest teams in the league right now. So I wanted to dive into their progress so far to see exactly what's made them so formidable when it comes to how they've performed against the rest of the league. To help me dive into this content tonight, I have Chris Mulholland, an NBA writer and reporter for Nets Daily, and he's the co-host of the Wingspan podcast. So he definitely dives into a lot of Nets content. He's in the media scrubs with Coach Nash and a lot of the other guys for the Nets. So he knows this stuff when it comes to this team. So I wanted to bring him on to discuss this team as well as the All-Star snub. So Chris, thanks for joining me this evening. Excited to kind of dive into this content with you.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. Always appreciative.
Absolutely, man. So with that being said, Chris, why don't we get into the All-Star snubs? The All-Star snubs, it's a topic that hits us every year. We want to look at who we think should have made the All-Star team but didn't quite make the cut. Devin Booker was going to be one of the names on my list, but obviously he is in the game now due to Anthony Davis's injury. So there are three names here I wanted to discuss here with you, some of the guys here that I thought should have made it or had a really good case to make it that unfortunately didn't. And I've been advocating for an extra spot in the All-Star game for both conferences for probably about 5 years now. I hope they make that change because there's so many players in both conferences and there's always a bunch of guys that miss out. So I think it would be good to incorporate another spot so it more closely aligns with NBA rosters when it comes to like 13 players that address every night. And maybe that'll come in the future. But for now, how about Brandon Ingram? He's one of the names that I had on my list prior to the reserves being announced. And you know, looking at his numbers, they're identical to last season's. He's actually slightly more efficient, 1% better from two-point range, 0.5% better from three, and he's about 3% better from the free throw line over last year, which is, of course, an all-star season for him. So when it comes to him and Zion, it's a close race. They're both very deserving. But Zion, of course, is one of those, you know, one of the most incredible eye-drawing talents in the league. You know, he's having an incredible season. He's averaging over 25 points a game, and he's ultra efficient while doing so. So how are you feeling about that, Chris? Did you have Ingram? Did you have Zion, either of those guys? And if so, what gives one of them the edge over the other for you?
That's a great question. It's a very valid debate, right? So with Brandon Ingram, he saw last play last year, right? All-star, had a career year all around. And this year he's produced the same exact numbers just about. And same thing with Zion. Zion's even taken a bigger leap. So as you see, I have a couple notes written down here, but Brandon Ingram, he's right there. Zion's averaging 25.3 points. Ingram's right below him at 24. Then you look at the minutes. They're both playing high minutes. Ingram's playing a little more minutes per game than Zion is. Zion's playing 32.7. Ingram's hovering around that 35 game mark. But what it comes down to at the end of the day is it's the Western Conference. And, you know, in the Western Conference, it's a loaded conference, especially with stars. Yeah. And I knew right off the bat that when I was thinking about jogging names like everyone else when the time was coming around when they're going to announce the reserves, the starters, I knew none of them were both going to be the starters. I think everyone could agree on that. Mm-hmm. But when you think about for a reserve point of view, it would be very hard for both of them to make it. So like you said, for sure, it's going to be one or the other. And given Zion the edge, I would have to give it to Zion. I agree with it. Because with Zion, as he's taken that leap, and not only he's taking the leap, but you got to also remember there's a fan vote that incorporates a lot into this, the media vote. There's different voting breakdowns. And as well, you consider that dominant play. So it didn't surprise me one bit when Zion was named as a reserve. Obviously, you know, first career All-Star selection. Congrats to him. And what it comes down to is just, like I said before, his play overall. He has more of an all-around game aside from Ingram. Obviously, Ingram can shoot more. He's more of a kind of more offensive minded, I guess you could say, when it comes to spreading the floor shooting. He brings more offensively, but Zion's more on the defensive end. We see what he could do with the block shots, the presence. Whenever he's on the court, there's always a different type of presence. You know he's there. He's very athletic, very hyper, just an all-around energy guy. And so it didn't really surprise me. And plus, at the end of the day, both these guys played identical games, right? None of these guys really missed a lot of time so far in this crazy season. So that's kind of what I have to believe in when you want to debate those two.
It's a valid argument, man. I mean, there's no denying Zion's athleticism, his talent, and he amplifies the strengths of the team around him. Looking at his on-off numbers, they're excellent. You know, the team performs at about 6 points per 100 possessions better when he's on the court. And, you know, obviously he plays a good amount of minutes, and I'm just just encouraged by the fact that he's been able to stay healthy this season. That was one of the big question marks on him coming into his career, especially after he missed time during his rookie season, was, is he going to be available enough to really make a difference for his team? And the answer so far, at least this season, has been yes. You know, he's made an incredible difference here. And, you know, the team performs better and things run better. And it's really cool to see how he's just been such a force. You know, nightly, he's making incredible highlights. He's putting those putback jams in. He's getting a lot of rebounds. And, you know, he's one of those energy players, and you can't lose sight of him on the court. And, you know, typically we say that of guys that are movement shooters or great off-ball threats. But with Zion, anywhere inside the paint, he is an incredible, incredible threat. And it's really incredible. He might be one of the strongest players in the NBA. A few nights ago, you know, he went up against, I think it was Tristan Thompson on the Celtics, and, you know, he vertically challenged him at the rim, and he just bullied him, just pushed him right down to the ground. And, man, he's just one of the most exciting players out there. So
whenever he's on the court, there's that certain type of presence, right? It's mostly like other star players in the league, but on his end, it's more the strength wise, right? You know that he could jump really high. You know the strength there as well. And you know that he's just going to bully you to the rim as well. So he's one of those young players that play with a lot of confidence overall.
True that. Absolutely, man. So how about another name here that we're looking at, you know, while we're looking at players that play inside of the paint, you know, closer to the rim, Domantas Sabonis is another name, you know, I've been looking at for a while here. The Pacers had a really great start to the season. They've fallen back down to earth a little bit here, but they're still, you know, a very formidable team. And a big part of that is Sabonis. And, you know, we forget sometimes that this Pacers team is missing two starters. Caris LeVert and TJ Warren continue to miss time. So Sabonis right now might be the best player on this team, and he's carrying the burden for them night in and night out. So what it comes down to for him, you know, competition in the conference for an all-star spot, he was going to go up against, I think, Ben Simmons and Julius Randle were his primary competition. And, you know, the Simmons case is obvious. You know, his Sixers team is leading the Eastern Conference right now at a record of 21-11, and he's had a great probably past 3 weeks for Ben Simmons, you know, really just getting that team to be the best version of themselves. And obviously Julius Randle is doing the same for the Knicks. A little bit different, you know, for Randle, he's pushing his team towards relevance again, you know, from the pits of the Eastern Conference to relevance to almost 500 ball. It's been really cool to see. So, you know, Randle obviously made it. That's great for him. Ben Simmons is in there as well. And it gets kind of tricky when you think about it, because I think Ben Simmons had a rough start to the season. So I was leaning a little bit more towards Sabonis, but it's really a close race here, man. We're nitpicking all the way through. So how you feel about that one?
Well, you know, Sabonis was always going to be one of those names that you knew that wasn't going to be, like, you know, a lock, right? Because you have Vucevic as well. You got other guys, too, that, you know, it's like I said, the talent in the league overall, whether the West is obviously more loaded when it does come to stars. But around the whole league, the star platform and the amount of stars is only going to grow from here, because you see how big the game is growing now internationally. You see college players now, players that are coming out of high school have different opportunities to go overseas and develop and play against grown men and come to the league and have that less of an adjustment period. So the talent's only going to rise from here on, right? So like you said, with Sabonis, it was a tough spot. You know, it's a very sticky spot for him, because with the East, it's like you said, the Pacers are sitting at the 4 seed right now. I think they're just hovering around 500. And on top of that, you know, like you said, Ben Simmons, that he's leading the East right now. His Sixers are leading the East. Plus, he's got an MVP teammate, Joel Embiid, that he's committed his whole offseason to kind of getting that his game back and kind of just regrouping everything. He hired a personal trainer, a private chef. He really put his mind to playing basketball, put it that way, and really utilizing his skills and becoming one of the top players in this league. So that has to be noticed. And with Julius Randle, like you said, you know, Julius Randle, I really wanted him to be an all-star, and I'm glad that he got selected, you know, because although he's on the Knicks, and, you know, like we were talking about, he's putting the Knicks back on the NBA map. The Knicks, if he leads them into the playoffs, that'd be great, you know. Then the Knicks are trying to find that culture, and Julius Randle has really stepped up. And I always had a potential, I guess you could say, for Julius Randle when he got out of college from Kentucky. Obviously had a little sticky stint with the Lakers. And I'm glad that, you know, now he's not necessarily a young player anymore, but you could see him starting to gather everything to be more consistent. So, like you said, you know, for Sabonis, it's very, very hard because he averages almost a double-double. He's averaging 20 points, and I think it's a little over 11 rebounds per game. Mm-hmm. And then you got to also consider he's also a great passer as a big man. He's averaging, I think, just under 6 assists. And he really fits what that Pacers team is doing. And it's just, like I said, it's just a tough spot for him, and considering the talent around the Eastern Conference League, you know, he just was on the short end of the stick.
He really was, man. You know, you think about it, you know, he's averaging a career high in points per game. You know, not quite there in rebounds, but his assists are as best as they've ever been, 5.7 for the season. So, I mean, at this point, I think it's fair to say Sabonis is one of the best big men in our league overall, just because of all the skills that he kind of brings into one package. And, you know, it comes to the shot being improved. It comes to his playmaking just being impeccable, you know, in the elite category, especially for his position, and being able to kind of start the break. And that's a new skill that teams have wanted, you know, their big men to have. And I think it's almost like a game breaker in a sense, if you can have your center or power forward start the break, and then maybe some of those other guards or wings that are off ball threats can kind of operate and do their thing coming off of curls and things like that. And, you know, for Sabonis, you know, he makes things happen. So
exactly. That's the big thing. He's more than just like, you know, a traditional big. He could shoot the ball. He could literally do everything. That's why his value with the Pacers, you know, he's always been there. And you got to remember who his dad is, right? His dad was one of those guys that changed, formed this whole entire league. He's the big man. Yeah. He really put big men, just that European style of big man, that shooting, being versatile, agile, passing most importantly. So it's just like, and you know, it's, you could tell that, hey, this is Arvidas' son, you know? So like, it's a hard ball at the end of the day for him.
True that. And I love how you brought up the comparison with his father, because he's doing kind of what his father did in the past. He's just bringing it into a new generation. So that passing is there. He got that from his father. That's clearly inherited. That bully ball. I love the blend that Sabonis brings to the table. He's not just finesse. You think of like a Porzingis type player, but he's not just a bully ball guy, you know, maybe like an Enes Kanter or a Steven Adams. You know, he kind of blends the two types together. So there are times where he's light on his feet. He's more about the skill and the finesse in his game. And at other times, he's just like, get out the way. You know, I'm going to finish this basket.
That's why he's a problem with a lot of teams that play him, because, you know, on the scouting paper, you can see that he does all these things. He could be out in the arc shooting threes, and hey, if he notices that the other team has a front court weakness, he's going to attack that. So it's really hard to guard the guy, and like I said before, it's just a tough break for him when it comes to the All-Star nod.
It really is, and there's no denying that even though this season he might not be in that kind of category in the reserves, he's going to have multiple opportunities. I'm sure he'll have multiple All-Star bursts in his career. He's just reaching his prime now.
That's the scary part about it.
That is very scary. When the guy's kind of figuring out, kind of similar to Julius Randle, they're similar age. When you kind of break into that 25, 26 range and you really start to kind of put everything in your game together, and the mental and the physical are kind of all in one right now. So for Sabonis, I see a lot farther for him to go here. I mean, he's got plenty of years left, and, you know, he shouldn't feel bad about this. And the other part about not being a reserve, I think this season that makes it unique is, you know, there's a quick turnaround for a lot of these teams going into this season from last season. You know, the schedule is more condensed. There are certain aspects of the schedule that make it more taxing on bodies this season. So I think for guys being able to be off, I don't think everybody is kind of dreading it, you know, dreading not being a reserve. Some of the players, maybe like the Heat, Jimmy Butler and Bam specifically, I think they're not mad at not making it. Sure, they're maybe a little disappointed, but you get some extra rest. That's not the worst thing in the world. So I think that's something else we have to take into consideration here.
I agree with that. Because, you know, with the All-Star game this year, you know, you can't ignore that basketball is being played in pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at Atlanta, right? It has that reputation of being, you know, a party city, right? And it's got all the outside noise around it as well. When you think about an All-Star game with health and safety protocols and all that stuff, you know, you start to think, was it really worth this All-Star game happening, whatever the case is? Personally, I did not want the NBA to host an All-Star game. But it makes the most sense business-wise. You know, the league's – it is struggling with revenue, with having limited fans and seats. And this just goes back to when the whole pandemic happened with the revenue. So it all makes sense league-wise, business-wise, and everything like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's, like you said, it's mixed feelings with some players. You know, some players, they love to get that all-star nod because they know what it does. You know, it's a big reputation. It's a good resume stamp, you know?
Definitely.
Especially when you're coming up for contracts, you balance your play. Oh, this guy was named an all-star. We know what he could do. He's one of the best in the league, you know? So you can take the basics from it. But overall, you know, with basketball being played in the pandemic, a lot of players have mixed feelings, like you just said about it.
Yep, and then one other aspect of being a reserve is, of course, bonuses. A lot of these guys have a bonus in their contract that incentive to be one of the best players in the league. So, you know, it might not seem like a lot to them, maybe like another few hundred thousand, but, I mean, 300K, 500K, I mean, that's money in the bank regardless. So,
exactly. You know, I know we could wish we could get that, you know?
So. Oh, yeah, all day. Not even a question, man. So, yeah, for him, it's just a matter of time. I mean, Sabonis is going to be back there. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say Indianapolis will host the game in the future. I know they're supposed to have it this year, but they're going to have it.
The exact dates, because, you know, they all kind of came around at the same time with the MLB and, you know, the NFL and all that. So all the locations, I have to, like, look it up and remember it. But I believe Indianapolis is a spot.
Yep. So in that case, I mean, if Sabonis continues on this trajectory, he's going to have an opportunity to play in front of his home fans down the road. So, Hope for that for Sabonis. That'd be really cool. But while we're on the topic of guys playing for their hometown, I had a friend, you know, I was talking to on Tuesday night, and he's a huge Hawks fan, and he was so disappointed that Trae Young did not make the team. And he's like, the game is in Atlanta. How are they not going to pick Trae Young to play in Atlanta? That's just an unfortunate way this thing goes. Trae Young has been having a spectacular season, but unfortunately he falls in this list too of one of the snubs. His last five games, I think he's, you know, I don't know if it's that Damian Lillard effect that he gets snubbed and he goes off, you know, because he wants to get his revenge. Maybe we're looking at that type of situation, but in the last five games, he's averaging 33 points, almost five rebounds a game, 10.6 assists, 41% from three. So he's really making his case. He's saying, guys, you messed up not picking me. Look at these numbers. I'm clearly one of the best players in this league. And, you know, I'm thinking that maybe I could be reaching here. But maybe there's a stigma surrounding Trae Young. You know, he's obviously one of those guys that he reaches for foul calls. He's developed this kind of like, you know, move where he kind of stops on the dime and lets the guys run into him. And, you know, some of the people are not a fan of that. So I don't know. Like I said, it could be a reach, but I'm just trying to kind of think of reasons as to why he's not in the game, because he's been absolutely phenomenal, especially over the past couple of weeks or so.
Yeah, because with Trae, that's a great point, you know, because my viewpoint on the stigma, like you mentioned, you know, it's a very popular debate in a lot of people's eyes. You know, it happened with the Nets too. You know, remember with Steve Nash, he was very vocal about Trae Young drawing fouls.
Yeah, he was.
The right way to play ball, and kind of traced it back, saying, "Hey, I grew up watching a lot of Steve Nash," and noted how that was one of those things he picked up from him. But you know, with Trae, it's unfortunate. But like I said before, you know, it wraps around that same narrative of that there's a lot of talent to go around. You know, in the Eastern Conference, you look at the All-Star guards: Kyrie Irving, Bradley Beal, Jaylen Brown, James Harden, Zach LaVine. I think, Ben Simmons. So like, you just look at all those guys, and you know, when you talk about snubs, you also got to think about the counter argument of, okay, who would he replace? You know, would it be a Ben Simmons? Well, we talked about Ben Simmons. You know, the success of the team is one of the reasons why he's there. Jaylen Brown, you know, Celtics are struggling, you know, it's one of those, but his play on the court shows that, hey, he's an all-star. And with Trae, the reason why he's very successful in this league is because the Atlanta Hawks really built a great team around him. Because not only does he have shooters, but he has Clint Capela grabbing at least 15 rebounds a game, and that just adds more second-chance opportunities, you know, and he's a great screener. They really thrive in that pick and roll, and on top they could do the pick and pop. So like, there's so many methods that Trae Young can score, and like you said, you know, when a player gets snubbed from an All Star game, you know for a fact that they're going to want to put on big time performances in a stretch, because they want to prove that, hey, I was worthy of that nod. So like I said, with Trae, you know, he falls in that same category of, you know, he was snubbed, but it's a very hard debate to say, okay, well, you know, he was snubbed. I get the All Star game was in Atlanta and everything, but who would he replace? You know, it's the tough part of the business.
That's what it comes down to. Tough decisions have to be made. And I'm going to be honest, when I made my ballot, I think it was a couple weeks ago now, I didn't have him on my list. And that was before he went on. Mm-hmm. You didn't either?
I didn't either, no.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So this obviously isn't an isolated matter. I think a lot of people felt that for various reasons. You know, he wasn't quite deserving this year. But, you know, we can't just look at raw numbers, because that's the trap sometimes you fall into. We're saying, like, oh, wow, this guy is scoring this many points per game, or this guy is dishing out this many assists per game. He has to be in there. Well, you know, there's not a direct correlation. There's definitely a correlation, but it's not completely positive when we're talking about stats versus you place in the game. You know, there's the narrative, there's team performance, there's things like that. And with the Hawks, I mean, they've been much better than last season, but they're still they've been kind of on and off, up and down, 4-6 in the last 10 games. They're sitting at 11th in the conference at 14-18. So they stabilized a little bit, but they have had the struggle. So, you know, you look at the teams that are below 10 in the conference. You know, we have Beal on the Wizards that made the team. We have Vucevic for the Magic that are at 12th. And then we have, you know, there's Trae Young at 11 that didn't quite make it. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to be at the bottom of the conference, I mean, you have to be a game changer. And, you know, Vucevic has been that. Beal obviously has been that. So that's kind of like what tips the scales sometimes is like, how is your team performing? And then also, how's your team performing relative to expectations? I think that's something that we also have to think about.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it right there, right? There's so many. It's not when you think of, okay, all-star, right? You don't. There's no real clarification or check boxes that you have to meet nowadays, right? It's not like you have to be averaging this amount of points. You have to be averaging this. Like I said, it just dates back to the talent in the league overall, you know? When you talk about all-star snubs, you also got to think about the other side of who's going to take over, you know? And with Vucevic, he's proven that, hey, not only has he's putting up big numbers, but he's doing it at a consistent rate and really keeping that Magic team afloat. Because you look at this Magic team where the Nets are actually playing tonight, the thing is they've been battling. They've been roughed up by injuries with COVID and health and safety protocols. They've been roughed up. They've been keeping that ship afloat. So that's what it comes down to. And as you look down the list, like the other guys you mentioned as well, you know, it's with Trey, it's unfortunate. It's one of those things that, you know, there's other talent in the league that did surpass him, you know, with Kyrie Irving and the names I mentioned earlier, you know, so it's unfortunate.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it. It is, man. But like similar to Sabonis, he'll have his time. He's one of the great young talents in our league. So it's only a matter of time before he's back in the big game. But you mentioned the Nets are playing the Magic tonight. Why don't we take a look at them since this is up your alley, Chris? You cover them pretty much on a daily basis for SB Nation. So I really wanted to look at kind of what has caused them to be so successful this season and maybe take a slight snapshot into how they might compare relative to some of their peers in the Eastern Conference that, you know, we've already been talking about here so far a little bit with some of the snubs. So, you know, first of all, with the minutes, the allocation of minutes between their three stars, that's something I looked at in detail. And, you know, Nash has done a pretty good job of keeping at least one or two of those three guys on the court at all times. And, you know, three out of the four lineups that include the big three, you know, are huge positives. So, you know, it ranges from like a plus 20 net rating to plus 35. And, you know, it's only about a 9% of the time, 320 possessions where all three of those guys are on the court. So it's not that much. And part of that's because of injuries. But I mean, when they do play together, they're incredible. So all of the narratives and things about not being enough basketballs on the court, that's all been squashed so far. They work really well together when they all share the court. And then even when there's only two of those guys on the court, it's been a beautiful union so far.
That's exactly what you just mentioned. The most, I guess you could say, the most beautiful part about this Nets unit, right, is that you have guys like Joe Harris, Bruce Brown, and other role players that could give you 25 and 30 points per game just because of how they share that ball. And there's no question about what they could do offensively. If you watch basketball, you know what they could do offensively. They got Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant. You got Joe Harris as one of the league's most prolific three-point shooters in the league right now. And then you got other guys, you just go down the line of just guys that not only carry that experience when it comes to playoffs, such as Landry Shamet, someone that's been with the Sixers and the Clippers, but you even go down the line, you just see that this roster is just really just, it looks very appealing and it fits those superstars' molds. And as everyone knows, this Nets roster is not going to be looking like this until the finals, right? And Steve Nash told us today that the Nets want to remain flexible, and one of their main reasons for doing that is because of the buyout market. And what makes this Nets team so, now you bring up the argument, hey, the Nets, they don't have that front court piece, right? They don't have that rim protector anymore. They dealt Jared Allen in the trade, and you see Jared Allen, he's completely balling out right now in Cleveland, which, hey, very good for him, man, because he's working for a contract. So,
sure.
But the thing with the Nets is, the good thing about this Nets team that's even more scary is they know exactly where their holes are. They know that they need a rim protector. They know that the depth around them is something, especially later on the bench. You know, you want to adjust those things. And it's going to come down to, let's see what's going on, because the Nets are going to remain flexible. You see it now. Right before the guaranteed deadline on the February 24th, they waived Iman Shumpert, Noah Vonleh, and Andre Roberson. But Roberson and Shumpert came back on 10 days. And they even show, despite being a contending team, they're still looking for those diamond in the rough players. People that don't really watch the Nets don't really, or at least before the KD and the Big Three era, they don't realize that the Nets have done a very good job. And they've been one of the teams in the whole entire league that's done the best job when it comes to utilizing their G League. And by that, you see guys, Spencer Dinwiddie found the G League with the Windy City Bulls. Joe Harris, Canton Charge, found in the Cavaliers G League. You see, now we know those guys as household names around the league. Not necessarily Joe Harris, but, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie's made a name for himself. Definitely. And on top of this, they just signed Tyler Cook to a 10-day. Some guy that's really standing out in the G League. He's one of those guys that fit that front court need. And Steve Nash told us today, you know, despite, you know, it's going to be tough for him to see playing time, you know, with all those guys and how the Nets want to remain flexible. They still got to monitor all the movement, what guys play, how they play, and roll down the line. And the thing with this Nets team is that they're this winning streak that they're on, their 7-game winning streak, it's because they're so bonded and connected, and I think they just got really tired of losing. You know, they had an embarrassing loss against the Pistons that really shook the league. Everyone was like, okay, is this Nets team really legit, you know? Mm-hmm. And all the players understood that, and they heard the media like me and everyone else saying, yeah, defense is the problem here. And they've upped the defensive mentality. They upped that effort on that end. They gang rebound, and even because they're not a rebounding team, because they don't have that big. So overall, with this Nets team, it's really scary. That's what it comes down to, is because once they're slick together, and you can make this, I don't think there's no debate here that if the opposing team's not fully healthy, there's no way you're beating a Nets team of this caliber in a 7-game series as the roster stands now. Wait till the buyout market to see who's available, see how those pieces come in, and see how the roster plays out heading into playoff time. But I could tell you they're going to improve.
Definitely, man. And the defense has been a huge factor of that improvement, driving their success. They are still overall 23rd in defense, according to Cleaning the Glass, for the season. But you go back to their last 2 weeks, they've improved to 18th during this winning streak. So they're getting closer to league average. And if you combine their number one offense with the league average defense, I mean, that's devastating. They're getting by on defense, which is what they want. You know, I'm sure if you go and ask Coach Nash, it's like, what do you want from your team defensively? I'm sure he's not going to say, well, I mean, obviously you'd want to be elite, but that's probably not going to happen with this roster. But if you could be formidable, if you can have moments, key moments during a game where you can get stops, that makes all the difference. And I think one of the people driving that on the team specifically is DeAndre Jordan. Yeah. You know, I looked at what he's been doing recently, and, you know, just recently, like, I think it was like the last game, he matched his season high. The past two games, he's matched his season high with 4 blocks. And over the last 6 games, he's averaging 11 points, 9 boards, almost a double-double, 2.3 blocks. He's playing 30 minutes a game, which is very impressive for this guy that, you know, is not even really – he hasn't been starting recently. And, you know, he's leading the league in effective field goal percentage, so he's being ultra-efficient. This is the DeAndre Jordan we saw in L.A. with the Clippers, where he was an all-NBA third-team guy 1 year. He was an all-star. He's being a difference maker. He's doing his job to a T for that Brooklyn Nets team. So it's been very impressive. And you can't overlook that. You know, we look at the big stars all the time, but these other grit and grind players got to do their part. And DeAndre Jordan's one of those guys. And Bruce Brown. Bruce Brown is he's so fun to watch, man. He's a huge
He's great of
Harden and those guys. So
because the thing that's on top of the DeAndre Jordan question is, like, number one, the Nets play better small. You know, when they have Jeff Green in that lineup, obviously he's out with a right shoulder contusion. He just got ruled out for the game tonight, so he's not going to play.
Okay.
And gotcha. they just play better small. Bruce Brown has even seen some minutes at center. And because the thing, right, everyone's like, okay, why is a 6'3", 6'4", guard playing center? Well, the offense isn't going to be a problem, like I said, you know, because you know who can score. And they score, and they run Steve Nash's 7 or less offense, you know? So, like, that's the thing that goes into that. And with DeAndre Jordan, he's just stepped up overall. Because you got to think of DJ in this point of view. He's not starting. And you know, too, that the Nets are looking for that front court piece. You see it right now with Tyler Cook. They brought him in. They're going to expand. They just said they're going to remain flexible until up until that trade deadline, the buyout market, the free agent market. And on top of that, with DeAndre, you know, when if that piece does come, whether, you know, if it's going to be the main prize that everyone's looking at, especially Nets fans are looking at Andre Drummond, could they go for a trade for a McGee? What's going to happen? Because you don't know who's going to get bought out when that time comes, right?
Sure.
Obviously, Drummond's sitting right now, and a lot of Knicks rumors have been popping up with him getting traded there, which I would love as well. I think Drummond in the Knicks is a good match, considering Mitch is out for a good amount of time. Yeah, like you said, like that's the scary part about this Nets team is that these guys, these role players around them, they could give you 20 points, 25 points on any given night because at basic mentality when it comes to players, if you're a role player and you get those touches on the offensive end, you know you're going to work your butt off defensively to get those touches.
Absolutely.
It's a mutual relationship. So you saw during the Kings on Tuesday night with Bruce Brown, scored a career-high 29 points. And you just go down the list. You see Joe Harris has a lot of prolific three-point shooting games. And there's been other guys too. TLC, who contributes 15
points
on the bench. Like, you know, the list just goes on with these key role players that really implement and fit well with this Nets team. But like I mentioned before, this roster is not going to be how it is in a couple weeks' time.
For sure. You know, you mentioned that so many players on this team get opportunities. If they're working, you know, doing the dirty work, they're going to get the ball. And that's so true because of a guy named James Harden that's been just a revelation for this team. You know, conference player of the week just recently. And, you know, we can talk about the points all we want, but I think the big stat we have to keep our eye on is how he's been dishing the ball in terms of just his assist on the game. You know, for the season, he's averaging 11.6. You know, it's shades of his Houston season where I think he led the league in assists one year, about maybe 3 years ago now. But I mean, he's always had this skill. You know, his scoring has been astronomically good for the past couple years or so. But the assist, the passing has always been there. So Bruce Brown is benefiting. DeAndre Jordan is benefiting. TLC, you know, Kyrie is benefiting. And he's just so unselfish. And I think that's another huge reason as to why they're doing so well is because Harden stepped back. And I already heard about this, Chris, the quote that I can't remember if it was Kyrie or Harden, but one of those guys was saying like, okay, you know, I'm going to step back from my role. Maybe it was Harden. I'm going to be the point guard. You're the shooting guard. So, I mean, obviously they fit better in those roles because Harden is a natural facilitator. Kyrie is a natural scorer. You know, he can score off the dribble, spot up, whatever the case may be. So they fit really well in those roles. You know, they just had to kind of flip-flop, but they found what works for them, and now everybody's kind of reaping the benefits in this. I think it's like a 7-game win streak now, and the league can't handle them when they're operating at this level offensively, because you're not going to outscore this team. There's just so much talent there.
That's the thing, right? And when the whole big three happened, the big trade happened, the blockbuster trade, you know, James Harden, like Sean Marks, the Nets general manager, even when he did the press conference talking about the trade, he said that he'd even need to bring up sacrificing. James brought it up on his own, so he knew that in order for these teams to thrive offensively, because you got to remember, prior to this trade, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, they were all top three in usage rate. So that goes fitting that narrative. Okay, there's only one ball. There's not three balls, you know. And with James Harden, you know, he's a natural facilitator. He's a natural point guard. The quote that you mentioned earlier that was from Kyrie Irving. He went up to James Harden and said, "You're the point guard. Now I'm the shooting guard." And 3 weeks before that, or 4 weeks before that, Kevin Durant even acknowledged that, hey, James Harden is a natural point guard. Mm-hmm. And with this team, like I've said before, if James Harden facilitates at that level, yeah, I think he could be leading the assist still. I'm not too sure. I haven't checked in a couple days or so. But with him facilitating like that, and like we've talked about, they get the touches offensively, they're going to work their butts off defensively. And that's what this team is starting to done. And with Steve Nash, too, with the camaraderie, that was one of the major points he hit on today. What do you credit this win streak to? And he said it was camaraderie. He said on top of that, you see this Nets team as a whole. They're building that bond, you know. Winning obviously solves a lot. And when you're this Nets, a lot of high expectations, you know. You got James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving on one team. If they're not in the NBA Finals, you could call this season a failure, you know. So overall, like I said before, this Nets team is dangerous, especially when they start moving that ball. And if you're not a healthy team, you're not going to beat this team in a 7-game series.
I agree. And, speaking of those other teams, there's four, maybe five primary competitors that Brooklyn's going to have in a playoff series. So if we're kind of extrapolating this performance and we're trying to pinpoint exactly what they look like in a playoff setting, you have to start with Philly and Milwaukee. Obviously, they occupy those two spots, I think, in the conference there. So Milwaukee, I believe they're at three currently, Philly being at number one, just a half game ahead of Brooklyn. They're going to pose stiff threats to Brooklyn, and they're going to kind of be a roadblock if Brooklyn wants to break through to the finals. Mm-hmm. So specifically, looking at Milwaukee, I don't know what to make of them. I think I'm a little worried about them, honestly, because I'm not sure how they're going to adapt their game. I think that's the big shortcoming of Milwaukee. They're really good when they can do works, but when that plan fails, they struggle with kind of coming up with a new solution. So I think this season, their five-out philosophy, what they've been working with, is starting to fail them a little bit. Their defensive philosophy has been kind of schemed out a little bit. I think if Jrue Holiday is back, it's still going to be almost like a toss-up in that series. But with Brooklyn just being as, offensively potent as they are, I don't even know if Brooklyn would be able to slow, or Philly or Milwaukee here would be able to slow them down in a 7-game series enough to be able to kind of break through. So that is going to be interesting if that actually comes to be in the playoffs. Giannis, I think he's going to have his games where he kind of just goes off. But aside from that, I'm just not sure about Milwaukee. Initially, I had them kind of breaking through to the finals, but I don't know. My thought on them keeps changing by the day, but regardless, I think Brooklyn would have a great chance to kind of upset them again in the playoffs if it were to happen. And once we get there,
if you get Kyle Lowry, that's scary. Like I've talked to a couple people about that. Like, Kyle Lowry, he's at that point in his career. It's past that prime point. He's won the championship in Toronto. His time, the hourglass is ticking, right? So the thing is, he wants to play in front of his hometown crowd in Philadelphia. He went to college at Villanova. He's had a whole. His whole basketball career, aside from his time in Toronto, has been based really in Philadelphia, So with Kyle Lowry, if he goes to the Sixers, he's a great point guard to bring off the bench, And on top of that, you don't know what they could do. They could move around. Doc Rivers, he's a great coach. He knows how to work with those type of players.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said before, in that second round, after the Nets get past the first round, they're going to meet one of those top contending teams in that second round, whether it's going to be Milwaukee. You got to also remember that the standings from now till playoff time are just going to be so mix and match because a lot of teams are dealing with different issues, Like we talked before, basketball is being played in a pandemic, COVID protocols, player gets caught on contact tracing, whatever the case is, that could really rupture a 5-game span, a 4-game span, whatever the case is. So you see a lot of these teams, if you look at the records from last year compared to this year, right? A lot of the teams, there hasn't been too much movement with other Eastern Conference teams aside from the Nets, right? But you see Milwaukee kind of dipped a little bit. And, it gets back to that point of Middleton and everything like that. It's hard to win this league when you don't have two prolific superstars. Mm-hmm. And with Middleton, he's a great player. He's a great, just a great shooter, all-around player. I really liked how from last season to this season, he's incorporating that all-around game. Not only is he just a guy outside the arc that's a dangerous threat, but he could take you down the lane. He's great passing. He's a great component to have next to Giannis. Like I said before, anyone that really watches basketball knows that if you don't have two prolific superstars on one team and you're going up against a Nets team that has three of the best scorers in this league and three in his prime, all those things that match together, it's a hard matchup. That's why I said, if you're not healthy, you're not going to beat this team in a 7-game series. It's tough.
Exactly, man. Exactly, man. And, you brought up Philadelphia and – yeah, I think that'd actually be the stiffest challenge. I'm starting to lean more towards Philly as the days go by because Embiid is the best he's ever looked. Mm-hmm. Simmons is kind of settling into his role. Seth Curry is doing exactly what they the Sixers brought him on to do. So that whole team is kind of coalescing at the right time. Mm-hmm. So I just look at what they bring to the table on both sides of the ball, and I think they have a very good chance. I would give them a decent chance to – probably the best chance of any of these rivals to knock off Brooklyn in a series – because they can kind of match their prolific scoring somewhat. And then defensively, they have guys almost just about at every position that can match up pretty well and just give Brooklyn enough resistance to kind of slow down their attack. So That's probably the series in the East I'm most looking forward to. You know, they're together up there in the standings for a reason. I mean, both of them have kind of discovered who they are, and it's driving their success forward as we reach the halfway point of the season. So definitely going to be the stiffest challenge. But I mean, right now, other than those two teams, Milwaukee and Philly, I'm not sure if anybody's going to be able to knock off Brooklyn. I threw in Boston and Miami, but as it stands, I don't think either of them have what it takes. They're just lacking that extra something it takes to kind of overtake a team that has as much talent as Brooklyn offers right now.
Remember, it's not one game, it's a 7-game series, you know, and it's what it comes down to, you know, and it's very easy for this Nets team. You know, they make great adjustments. Steve Nash is really good at out of timeouts, making play calls, you know, and this team, like I said before, they're starting to really put everything together. So that's really what it stands still. And like I said before, this roster is not going to look like it is a couple weeks down the line. Even after the buyout market, you're going to see a lot of movement, not a lot, but you're going to see some movement.
Yeah. Yeah. A decent amount. And you know, I think that's the reason of that. You know, a lot of people see this going on, and some people might not be aware of this, but the reason that Brooklyn is shifting bodies so much, they're trying to, I say finesse the system kind of jokingly, but it's really to lighten the load on their books when it comes to their cap situation, because obviously Brooklyn is probably the top spender. I think Golden State it might be the highest spending team, but after them, man, Brooklyn is just loaded on the books. Mm-hmm. You know, they're looking at, you know, they're over the tax by $30 million. So, I mean, their tax payments could be through the roof. Exactly. So essentially they're bringing guys on like Shepherd and Robertson, and then they're cutting them before they guarantee. And then they convert it to 10 day because 10 days just became available to sign. So those contracts are much more, you know, manageable on the cap sheet than like a full, you know, even a minimum contract, because you're talking about a minimum. When you're that far into the tax, even that becomes expensive when you're doing your multiplication and the whole tax payment and things like that. So definitely something to consider with Brooklyn. And, you know, if you're a fan like me of like the cap situation, salary cap, Brooklyn is a fascinating case because they're operating on the margins so carefully because they know, I mean, their checkbook is going to get hit hard after the season. And of course, it's worth it. You know, if you're going to win a championship, it's possibly.
At the end of the day, too, it's worth noting that the owner, Joe Tsai, he did not shy away from saying, hey, I'm willing to go into the luxury tax. And that's one of the main reasons, you know, we saw with James Harden, you know, having those three contracts on the books. Then you got all the other guys, like you mentioned, with the guarantees, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I'm really interested to see. I mean, this is going forward into the next season a little bit, but Bruce Brown's situation has kind of caught my eye because right now, I mean, that's honestly a bargain. You know, he's making $2 million, you know, right now, just kind of looking at their – or not even $2 million, like 1.6.
Nets can extend him any day. Like, you know, he's up for the extension talks could happen. But, you know, like I said before, the Nets want to remain flexible with this roster. So do I see Bruce Brown getting an extension anytime soon before the buyout market? No. But, like, on top of that, you know that the Nets are going to want to keep this guy around.
Oh, yeah. He's kind of one of those glue guys that make everything kind of run even more efficiently.
He does the small things. Yeah, one of those guys.
Exactly. He plays so much bigger than his size. That's one of the reasons why he can operate at center a little bit, is because, you know, he has that bulldog mentality. So he's, you know, one of my favorite guys to watch. And, you know, he's really made a name for himself coming from the Pistons. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen for him in the future. And I'm excited to see what Brooklyn has to offer as they continue to move their streak forward. You know, I have a good feeling that tonight will be 8 in a row for them playing Orlando. It's going to be one of their softer games on their schedule. But once KD is back, man, this team might even be rolling even better than they are now. So this is just the beginning for Brooklyn basketball.
This is just the beginning. It's a new era. And like I've told every Net fan, you know, enjoy what you're watching, because a lot of teams around the league, they wish they could have one of these guys. The Nets have three.
Exactly, man. Like, this doesn't come around very often. It's something you got to take advantage of. You got to really enjoy while the time is here. So, yeah, exactly. So, obviously, guys, I, you know, kind of messed up with this little ticker here at the bottom. You know, I had All-Star Stubbs on for the entire time, but you know what we're talking about. You kind of get the idea. You know, we broke down the Nets, and we're looking at how they're looking for this season and beyond. But I think that about covers it, man. So, Chris, thanks again for joining me on this podcast. Really enjoyed your time and your thoughts on the Brooklyn Nets. Before you head out, why don't you let the people know where they can find you on Twitter or where they can find your work over for Nets Daily?
Well, first, most importantly, man, thank you for having me on. Always grateful for an opportunity. You know, I'm always grateful for those. And if you need anything from me, feel free to reach out. But
appreciate it.
For me, You can find me at Twitter at cmilholandsb. And yeah, just anywhere, just type in Chris Mulholland, you'll find me. I write for netsdaily.com, which covers the Brooklyn Nets for SB Nation. It's their site. And yeah, any type of Nets news, check out Nets Daily.
Perfect. Love your guys' content over there. You're always knocking out of the park when you're covering these teams. So for Business Casual Basketball, BC Basketball 2 is going to be our handle on Twitter and Instagram. And then bcbasketball.info is where you can find us online if you want to check out some of our blog posts and other resources across the league. So thanks again, everybody, for joining us on this podcast. We'll be back next week covering the league overall. And hope you enjoyed this evening and the rest of this season. And we'll be seeing you back here on the podcast real soon. Take care, everybody.